Deadwood Soundlab.
Hey everyone. So today I've got a little bit more from the junk drawer. So the first segment that I have, the audio is a little bit wanky, but it's totally listenable. I pulled it from Instagram Live. I had jumped on right after I saw Into the Spider-Verse, and I was thinking about the evolution of comic book movies and how the aesthetics evolved to get to where Into the Spider-Verse was, and what a long journey it was, honestly. And so I just kind of hashed it out on paper really quick and then put out the video, and I like it so much that I wanted to share it with all of you. Then right after that, I've got a quiz. Basically, Brandon Beardsley, when he was on the Not Safe for Network, we did a Patreon segment where he wanted to quiz me on whether a Spider-Man quote was delivered from Tom Holland, Tobey Maguire, or Andrew Garfield. And so if you want to play along, you can just pause after he asks the questions and try and come up with it yourself, or you can listen to me mutter my way through it. So enjoy. I wanted to talk about the evolution of how comic book movies look now. And so I kind of wanted to step back through the history of cinema to talk about that, because Across the Spider-Verse came out and visually it is incredible. I don't think there's anything that's really like it. And I just want to step through all the check marks that we've gone through in comic book history so that everybody can kind of understand how we got here. Because I feel like when you say stuff like best ever, it tends to come off like you're being, I don't know, like best ever, worst ever. Like it happens on the internet all the time. Everybody has to exaggerate. But I've really, really thought about this since I went to the movie this weekend. And so I just wanted to break it down for you guys. So I'm going to go way, way back. We're going to talk about the Batman serials first. So when those came out, essentially what it was it was filmed like any noir movie at the time. A lot of shadow. It's people running around. They put fins on cars. I think they're in black and white, if I remember. And they don't look great, but they're not really trying to do a comic book aesthetic outside of putting the ears on the guy to make him look like Batman and putting the fins on the car to kind of make it look like the Batmobile. That's really all that they do. There's not a whole lot else. So we don't really see anybody trying to ape a comic book in a movie until Batman the movie. Once again, it's Batman. So when I'm looking at Batman the movie, what I'm seeing here is they're copying the style of the show, which was they were going for the style of the comics in the late 60s. You know, it was very basic stuff. You get your BAM, your POW, your ZOWIE, all of that kind of stuff. They would have this little thing that they would reel out and then it would say BAM, and they take that picture and put it in there. Everybody had very bright colors. At that time, comic books were only in a couple of colors, and so they definitely had all of that represented within the movie and the show as well. So we really don't get an evolution on that until we hit Superman the movie. And that was more, they were actually trying to make superpowers show up on screen. And that's what really sets it apart, because you had a Superman serial called Superman versus the Mole movie. It got turned into a TV show later with George Reeve. Those old ones were not very good, but when you get Christopher Reeve's Superman the movies, they're doing all kinds of wire work to try and make it look like he's flying. And that's what they were really worried about with the superpowers. You know, you have the breath where they're like drawing in kind of wind and doing the fans and everything, but the thing they're really, really working on is the flying. And so they have a lot of wire work going on, and they stood by it so much that the tagline for the movie was, "You'll believe a man can fly." Like, it was really, really important to them that they get that right. So Superman the movie is very, very crucial in the evolution of what we're talking about here. The next example I have was a bomb, but I think it's a good example of how it pushed the style forward, is Flash Gordon from 1980. Of course, Queen did the soundtrack. It's a cult classic. I love it. A lot of people don't. I understand it's a trash movie, but it's a trash movie I happen to really love. And what they do in that is everything that you see in that movie, especially once they go into outer space, it's primary colors everywhere. Just the reddest reds, the yellowest yellows, the greenest greens, like everything just pops out of the screen. There's no shadow at all. They're just trying to make sure that those colors really pop. And so I think for like a live action superhero movie, that was something that hadn't really been done before. I mean, Superman's uniform pops, but that's really all that we see, maybe Kryptonite. But outside of that, they're not really going for that comic aesthetic that Flash Gordon is going for. So we fast forward a couple of years. We're now on Heavy Metal. So if you're familiar with this comic book movie, it's based off of the magazine Heavy Metal, which was an adult fantasy comic. And this was an animated movie. It had voices like John Candy and all kinds of metal bands and rock bands of the day. But what set Heavy Metal apart was they were looking at the illustrations in Heavy Metal. If you've never picked one up before, they would have different artists and writers come in and do different stories. And so the art styles varied wildly depending on who was doing those stories. And they had a few that would show up pretty consistently in the magazine. And so a lot of the stuff that you would see in the movie was based off of stuff that was in the magazine. And so they were actually trying to ape the style. And keep that in mind, because we don't truly see that again until this weekend. So Heavy Metal is a precursor to Across the Spider-Verse. We'll get back to Across the Spider-Verse because, of course, this conversation is culminating into that. So the next one I mention is Creepshow. And I mention Creepshow because every time that they're doing a segment, they'll have these comic book panels and they'll kind of show what just happened in the previous segment. And then they'll set up the next segment. They've got kind of a Crypt Keeper guy. It's based off of EC Comics, Tales from the Crypts, Tales of Suspense, Tales from the Vault, I think. Like all of those stories, they're aping that style for Creepshow. Now, they don't hold it for the entire thing, although I would say the segment with Ted Danson where he kind of comes back as a zombie, that's definitely in the style of an EC Comics zombie. But the reason I mention this is because that comic style, we see it in a lot of stuff. Like we see it in the sequel for Swamp Thing, for example. We just see it all over the place where they'll just try and give you the idea of a comic book by just showing you a panel where they're illustrating parts of the movie. And they did do that a little bit in Superman, the movie, in that they give you the actual Superman number one and they show panels from it. But this is evolving the idea like our movie is the story, so we are showing you segments of the movie. So that's where it kind of stands out, and it becomes a standard in the 80s. Whenever you see something kind of comic book adjacent, they do that a lot since Creepshow had come out. Now, the next one I'm going to mention is Batman, and it's very, very influential. In fact, I would say for the next 10 years, everything just kind of stops in terms of evolving style, because everybody goes to copy Batman in 89. So what they do is they have the suits with the musculature, really, really defined abs and stuff like that, like you would see in the comics, but they're building it into the suit so you can see it. That led to stuff where you have masks where you can't turn your neck. You know, if you ever look at Michael Keaton in those movies, he's moving like this because he can't do this because the mask won't let him do that. You know, we're seeing the vehicles really show up. They're actually designing the vehicles to look like they would in the comics. So you got, I believe, the Batwings in that one. You got the Batmobile in there, you know, and they're going with this dark aesthetic. And Tim Burton likes a dark aesthetic, but it also is there because it can hide a lot of the stuff that they want to hide, like wire work, for example. It's much easier to hide a wire if you haven't brightly lit the set. It's much easier to hide connecting with a punch you're like a foot away when it's dark. So it's very practical because CGI really, really sucked in 89. It was around. I mean, you had movies like Tron in 83, but it wasn't very good. And so you had to hide a lot of your practical stuff. You get a lot of stuff that copies that style. I love Sam Raimi, but Darkman, definitely copying from that style. The Shadow is definitely copying from the style of Batman. All of these things are aping off of that, and we don't really see anything that breaks out of that mold until we get X-Men. So when X-Men comes out, they start the trend of we're just going to throw out any comic accurate thing whatsoever, and we're just going to do dark suits. It's a bit of a holdover from Batman, but they go the really dark suit. You start to get a lot of the jokes that the comic books, like, we know these are for kids, right? You know, they have a joke about, like, well, would you like it in yellow? Because that's what the X-Men wore. And that probably drove every giant fan of the X-Men crazy, but the general audience who might have a passing reference for it or had seen the cartoon all chuckled. You know, it was one of those things. They also start to put in CGI with the powers. So, you know, you're seeing Iceman create things, stuff like that. Like, you're actually seeing CGI start to work with the practical to try and make these effects. So then, same year, we get The Matrix. And I know The Matrix isn't a comic book movie, but it is based off of anime. It's based off of some comics. It's based off a lot of things. But in particular, it cannot be understated how influential that bullet time was. Like, slow motion just became so much more of a thing once they had that bullet time and you could make it look like that camera was moving everywhere where you wanted it to move. It was unlike anything we had ever seen before. And so I think The Matrix really has a notch in comic book movies going forward because of that technology. Like, once that came out, it was a genie out of the bottle. You can put it back in the bottle. The next one I think is really notable is Sin City. So Robert Rodriguez basically listened to George Lucas's pitch talking about going to digital filmmaking instead of actually, you know, using film. And he realized that one of the things he could do was make Sin City look like the comic book. So if you're not familiar with the Frank Miller comic book, it's all black and white. And then occasionally you'll get a splash of color somewhere, usually like a bright yellow or a bright red. You know, like, he'll paint a character in that, or he'll just paint a city light with the light coming down, or like one car, you know, something that you want your eye to be drawn to. This was just not possible on film. Like, this is something that you could only do with digital. You could color correct things with film, which meant you used chemicals to basically change the color a little bit. For example, The Godfather, they wanted it to look more old-timey, so they use these chemicals to basically make it have a somewhat sepia feel. Even though it's in color, it does have that old-timey kind of look to it. If you look at Suspiria, they're really bringing out the bright reds, the bright blues, and all this because they're using all sorts of chemicals with this old style of film that was actually being out of print. Digital let you control all of that kind of stuff. That was revolutionary. Sin City was a hit. It was a big hit because everybody was like, wow, I've never seen this before. The next thing I would mention is Spider-Man. I just want to say the web slinging, it's really the first time that we see CGI completely embraced. They're okay with going away from an actor on the set and actually just animating the entire thing. Like, you'll see Tobey Maguire in behind the scenes. He'll do some wire work to, like, come down off of a wall when he has to have a speaking scene or something like that. But when he's going across the city, there's nothing real about that. It's all a computer. Does look a bit hokey now, I will say. It looks a little better if you're watching it in HD, but if you're still watching like 720 or like an old tube TV, kind of looks like crap. You can see a lot of the seams. But that was amazing at the time, because somebody like Spider-Man, you just could not do. And that's what people kept coming to over and over again. It was one of the reasons why James Cameron ultimately didn't do Spider-Man. There's this famous story that he was going to do Spider-Man, and his take on it was he was going to tie it to puberty. So with the webs and stuff, gross. But that was his idea. And what I've heard is ultimately what he landed on was the effects aren't there. We can't do this. So they didn't. So what Sam Raimi was able to do with the computers is you get to have Spider-Man fighting the Green Goblin all across the city while they're flying around. You only need certain scenes that are wired. You know, you only need certain things. This blows open the superhero genre. One of the reasons why it really starts to pop at that time, there's two reasons. The first reason, which has nothing to do with what we're talking about, and the biggest reason, is it's a four quadrant hit. So if you're aware of what that is, it means there is the same amount of people over 30 as under 30 who watched it, and men and women. Four quadrants, and all of them loved it. It was 50-50 with the above 30 and below 30, and it was 50-50 with men and women. But the other thing, the reason why it was so influential on other superhero movies was you were like, we can actually show them doing these powers, flying around the city, doing whatever. we can just do it with the computer. We don't have to like figure out the practical effects for it, which was always a big thing. Once again, that's why you have Batman the movie drenched in darkness. You don't have to hide the scenes anymore. So the next one I'll mention is Hulk, just because we talked about with Creepshow, to give the idea of a comic book aesthetic, they were showing a drawing of a comic book panels of what happened in the movie. But what they did in Hulk, Ang Lee had these panels put up in the movie. And so it'll like do the split screen, but it'll all be in comic panel style. And then he'll zoom in on one of the panels. I actually think it's a really cool style. I think the movie is not the best. Bruce Banner, while I understand what he's going for, it's a real downer to watch. And Nick Nolte is tough at that point of his career to listen to for a whole movie, just being like, I'm gonna get your powers. Like, it's hard to listen to. But that aesthetic was pretty cool. And what I like about it was it advanced what Creepshow did. I don't think anybody really picked up on it after that, but I do think it was an evolution of at least this thing that we saw before. The next big one, and I'm sorry to keep going back to Batman. It's not that I'm like the biggest Batman fan in the world, but these are some of the biggest movies, and so we're going to keep coming back to it, is Batman Begins. And I think that's important because what Christopher Nolan does is he strips down a lot of the action and makes it a little more believable that it's a person. I mean, not really, but compared to the other ones, it's a little more believable. But more importantly, he goes with that grayscale washed out look, and DC lives in that look and would stay in that look for quite some time. And it's notable when they break out of that look, and we'll come back to that in a minute. Now, very quickly afterwards, you get The Dark Knight. Same year we get Iron Man. And while I don't think The Dark Knight actually moves anything forward visually, Iron Man sets the aesthetic for the MCU. You start to digitally code all of the colors in so that you're making the colors you want brighter, but you're not doing that thing like Sin City did where you're just washing out and doing grays and then popping color. You're just literally, they have a color palette they like to use, and so they pop those colors while they're doing it. They also are just going crazy with the CGI, like to a degree that hadn't really been done with superhero movies before. And I would say in particular with Iron Man, they have that digital display where Tony Stark is in the helmet and they find a way to show the audience what he's seeing in the helmet. If you think about it, it doesn't really make sense. You wouldn't actually see that in a helmet, no matter how they set it up, but it's for the audience to look at. And that's important because the MCU will go back to that over and over and over again. You know, computers that they're using, they'll have the little hologram, they'll kind of wipe them over. They set up like, we are going to like pop things out when it's like a computer thing. So I think it's important for that reason. The next Marvel I'm going to mention is Avengers Age of Ultron. Now, I know what you're saying. Why not Avengers? Because Avengers Age of Ultron has the first splash page I can remember. They're recreating a splash page. They're showing this page of everybody fighting Ultron, and the camera kind of pans over, and you just see everybody in slow motion doing these certain poses as they're like slowly going to strike or whatever. But it's basically a splash page like you would see in the comic. For those not in the know, you open up a comic when it's got two pages that are together and they're doing one continuous drawing, that is a splash page. Now we are going to go a quantum leap forward here. I'm going to talk about Into the Spider-Verse. So what I really liked about that movie was they took different characters, they animated them into different styles, right? Like you had an anime style, you had a Looney Tunes style for Spider-Ham. Miles Morales had his own style, which was kind of almost a 60s comic book style in certain ways, in that when they would get close up, you would see the little ink dots that you got in the printer. And that's just for old people, because young people aren't necessarily going to know that, because graphic novels look way better than the comic books of old. But they were incorporating this comic style into it, but then they were meshing together styles. I maintained that was the best looking animated movie I had ever seen. And it was until this weekend. We will come back to that. I want to mention Wonder Woman. I think it might have been before Into the Spider-Verse. I really can't remember at this point. I got excited about this and literally lashed this together in like 15 minutes before I went to talk. But Wonder Woman, I just think is notable in that DC kept going back to that Nolan style of those grays. and that washed out color palette. And when they're in the Amazonian beginning, they actually like start to show some color, and it does look a little bit like a comic book. But then of course they go right back to the grayscale as soon as she's out in the real world, which is like the DC real world. So artistically, I think it makes sense, but I also think it's a little bit of pushback of like, do we have to do this every single time, guys? You know, and then I would say the Suicide Squad, cutting ahead of something else I'm going to talk about, just completely breaks out altogether. James Gunn just clearly does not care about the washed out thing DC did. And everything is very colorful, much like it would have been in Guardians of the Galaxy, but I think a little bit more colorful because Marvel has their color palette. And I think James Gunn's color palette was way more with like pastels coming in. And it's just really, really colorful. I think in particular, when they have that fight with Starro at the end, there's just a lot of color assaulting you. And I really like the color palette of that. I suspect that's what it's going to look like going forward with James Gunn. I would be surprised if he went back to that washed out look that Nolan always used. Avengers Endgame, I just wanted to mention, there's an evolution of the splash page, just because the scene that everybody thinks about when you think about Endgame, where they just show everybody lined up, that's like a 8-page splash page. I don't know how you would do that, like a giant fold in on both sides, I guess, but I just enjoyed it. I just wanted to take note of it. I don't think it really pushes anything forward. It was just really cool and worth noting. Okay, so that brings us to Across the Spider-Verse, which is what I really wanted to talk about. So like Into the Spider-Verse, every character has its own style, but I think not only are you seeing what I said before, because we see those characters at certain points, but also with the individual character styles, you get stuff like the Scarlet Spider, and he is drawn in the 90s style. Think like McFarlane-esque, right? Like it's not McFarlane, but that type of drawing is what was really, really popular in the 90s. It was angular. It was a lot of muscles. It was a lot of belt pouches, quite frankly. The colors, you would get this almost dark tone to some of the colors. If you had a red, it was either like crimson, or if you had a purple, it would just be like this very dark purple, right? Like they really liked their darks. And then when Spider-Man would swing around, the red is not like this red, which you traditionally see with Spider-Man. It was duller. It was a few shades duller. That's just what they did in the 90s. A lot of blues, like dark blues mixed with black. And Scarlet Spider has that really light blue half shirt that he wears. And I think it pops because in the 90s, they were like, this is a way to make him stand out. He was a clone, just to go into the story of the comics, Ben Reilly. And so I think you were trying to make him stand out to be like that guy. Nope, there's something wrong with him. He's not the guy that you think he is. He looks a little bit like Spider-Man, but look at that shirt. He's not Spider-Man, you know? So they were with the color trying to make that distinction. You see that in the movie. Now, what really, really kicks it in a hyperdrive, and why I would recommend, if you have an IMAX screen or if you have an XD screen, if you have a giant movie screen, go see this movie. I mean, visually, it is just amazing. And what really puts it over the top for me is every world that they go to, they're doing the art style of that character. And quite frankly, the artist who rendered those characters. So the best example I can give is book ending the movie at the beginning and end. You've got Captain Stacy and Gwen Stacy's story. And it is drawn like the Spider-Gwen comic that's going right now. It's fantastic. And it's all done in this like oils. And so it looks like watercolor, but there's certain scenes where you're looking at a wall and like the intensity will go up or down depending on the emotionality of the scene. But then also at certain scenes, you can see the paint just kind of like running down, which is incredible. It's hard to describe some of the stuff I've seen in this movie, but it's 2 hours and 20 minutes and it's like looking at the most amazing painting you've ever seen. So definitely check out this movie. This is spectacle. And yeah, it'll look good on your TV at home, but it's going to look so much better when it's 100 feet high. Definitely go see Across the Spider-Verse. I highly recommend it. And I hope that everybody found this kind of instructional on how comic book movies are put together. It's been a long time since I've been excited enough about a comic book movie to actually talk about it at great length. So I just wanted to reach out to all of you. If you get a chance, check out Fields of Glory. That's my podcast, or anything on the network. Watch No Evil, Real War Project, and of course, Living with Your Dog. And I appreciate your support. Have a good night.
I was watching Spider-Man No Way Home the other day. And we got all three of the live-action Spider-Mans in that.
As everybody knows in this time in the future, if this is playing in people's ears.
Yeah. It inspired me to kind of put a little game together, and it's Who Said It?
Okay.
So you have to guess which Peter Parker. So there's no Miles Morales in this. I didn't do the Into the Spider-Verse for this. It's just Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, or Tom Holland.
Okay.
And this is all across all movies. So I pulled like Captain America, the Civil War.
Okay. So like all the MCU movies are on the table. Yeah. Gotcha. Or all the ones with Spider-Man, I should say.
Yeah. And there's only a couple that are outside of the regular Spider-Man.
It's just these three. We're not going to get like a Nicholas Hammond 70s Spider-Man?
No.
Okay. All right. Got it. No Nick Cage noir Spider-Man?
No John Hamm.
John Hamm? No. That would have been a great pick, but it was John Mulaney playing Spider-Ham. You said John Hamm? But now that I think about it, that's a missed opportunity in casting, right? Like, talk about the guy who's born for the part.
Yeah. All right. So we'll start off with, whatever life holds in store for me, I will never forget these words. With great power comes great responsibility. This is my gift, my curse. Who am I? I'm Spider-Man.
That is the end of the first Spider-Man, and that is Tobey Maguire.
That's correct.
Yeah, that is literally him, like, over the gravestone talking after he's, like, walked away from MJ and, like, made all the women pissed off in the audience because he doesn't go with her. Yep, that's 100% Tobey Maguire.
Yep. All right. No one seems to grasp the concept of the mask.
No one seems to grasp the concept of the mask. Man, that one's not ringing a bell. I'm going to say Andrew Garfield.
It is Andrew Garfield.
I'm going to kind of, my default mode here is when I'm not sure, I'm going to assume it's Andrew Garfield. Because here's the thing. Guess how many times I've seen Amazing Spider-Man?
Once.
I saw it twice. I tried to give it a second time because I was Christmas shopping a few years ago when The Amazing Spider-Man was hitting the market. And I did not want to buy it. I was so upset after seeing that movie. And then it had the most amazing case that had his face. And so I had to buy it because, like, I'd had a few drinks. And I bought that and the Jaws Blu-ray. And regretted buying the Amazing Spider-Man movie, but did not regret having the head. It's great. So I saw that one twice because I was, like, trying to talk myself into it. Like, maybe now that I know it's not good, maybe I'll find more in it. No. And then I saw the Amazing Spider-Man 2 once.
Context for this quote is he was being asked by one of the villains, like, who are you? He's like, do you not grasp the concept of a mask?
Okay.
Oh, my God. I should have stayed on the bus.
Oh, that's Tom Holland.
That's correct.
Yeah, that would have to be Infinity War, right?
That is, yeah.
Yeah, because he's in the bus and then he goes out and there's the big giant alien portal. I'm just going to milk this for everything that I can because I love Spider-Man. Dude, you're scratching my itch here.
Yeah. All right. He's assaulting people. I'm not sure. I mean, I saw that video with him and the car thief, and I think most people would say he was providing a public service.
Is that Andrew Garfield?
That is Andrew Garfield.
Yeah, that doesn't ring a bell at all. So,
yeah. Hey, guys, you ever see that really old movie, Empire Strikes Back?
Oh, that's from Infinity War. That's Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's also talks about that really old movie, Aliens.
Nice to have a fan.
Tobey Maguire?
That is Tobey Maguire.
Because that seems like a slightly surprised thing that somebody likes him and nobody likes Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in those movies, and I guess in part three, people kind of like him and he like gets high on his own supply. But in those first two movies, he's just so unloved in a way that the other two were not.
Like even his best friend, Harry Osborn, doesn't seem to like him all that much.
Yeah. What a difference a J. Jonah Jameson makes, right? Like when he's yelling about Spider-Man all the time. Just really puts a cramp on your public persona.
All right. You shouldn't be here.
You shouldn't be here?
Yep.
you shouldn't be here. That almost sounds like something that would have been in the newest movie. So it could be any of the three if that's the case. Tobey Maguire.
It is Tobey Maguire.
Is it from the new one?
No, it's actually the first one when Mary Jane shows up at the door like unannounced.
Okay.
You know, in the future, if you're going to steal cars, don't dress like a car thief, man.
Oh, okay. I think this is Tom Holland and Spider-Man Homecoming.
Not at all.
Damn it.
This is Andrew Garfield.
Okay. All right. I was thinking maybe it was the scene with the Prowler, who's not the Prowler in it, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he's like, you got to get better at this, man.
No. I didn't get expelled. I got community service.
I'm going to say that's Tobey Maguire from the first Spider-Man after he breaks Flash's arm.
Nope, that's also Andrew Garfield.
God damn it, dude. God damn it.
When I was pulling all these quotes, I'm like, God, I don't remember these movies at all.
Not even a little. I mean, I remember the vague plots, but that's about it.
Yeah, I completely forgot Lizard was a main villain in the first.
Oh, I didn't forget it. I was so disgusted with the way that they showed him.
Oh, yeah. It's just
not a good look.
But it's just like I was watching No Way Home and I was like, God, I don't remember this movie at all. I remember Andrew Garfield being 75 years old, but that's about
it. I guess he's technically 38. So he's technically – he is younger, but – whatever. He's still way too old to play a teenager.
I've faced a lot of deception, and I'm tired of the lies, so it's time for the truth to be out there. Are you dating?
Is that Tom Holland?
That is Tom Holland.
Yeah, that seemed like a Spider-Man Far From Home thing.
No, that's Homecoming.
That's from Homecoming, huh?
Yeah.
Who's dating in Homecoming? Who's he talking to?
He was talking to... It wasn't MJ. It was...
Liz?
Yeah.
Liz is...
Vulture's daughter.
Yeah, Liz is a squeeze in that one. Liz Allen.
Yeah. This beats all the meatloaves.
Man, I don't remember that. This beats all the meatloaves. That almost sounds like a Raimi line. I'm going to go with Tobey Maguire.
It's Andrew Garfield.
Fuck. Fuck you, Garfield.
I missed the part where that's my problem.
Oh, that's Tobey Maguire in the first Spider-Man.
That's totally Tobey
Maguire. Yeah, that's when he lets the thief go who kills his Uncle Ben.
Yeah, and they actually reference that clip in the newest No Way Home. I understand that. I'm in college now. I think it's time I took care of my own dirty underwear.
Is that Andrew Garfield?
That is Andrew Garfield.
I almost said Tobey Maguire because he went to college, and then I remembered that Andrew Garfield graduates from high school in the second Amazing Spider-Man, and then I remembered that line because he says it to his Aunt May.
That thing doesn't obey the laws of physics at all.
Boy, I'm going to say Tom Holland. That sounds like a Tom Holland
That's
line.
That's totally Tom Holland.
Yeah. It sounds even more like Tom Holland if you're like, that thing obeys the laws of physics.
Spider-Man wasn't trying to attack the city. He was trying to save it. That's slander.
Oh, yeah. That's from Spider-Man 2. That's J. Jonah. That's like, I think you're mixing that up with the J. Jonah Jameson.
No, it was, he was talking with J. Jonah Jameson.
Okay. Because like, I thought the line was like, he says something to J. Jonah Jameson and he goes, I resent that comment. Slander if it's in print or something like that.
It's a little tight around the old web shooter.
I want to say Andrew Garfield, but I want to say Tobey Maguire. It sounds like more something that Andrew Garfield would say, but I'm thinking about that scene where he's like talking about his costume writing up when he has to take the elevator when his powers kind of wan in Spider-Man 2. I'll say Tobey Maguire.
It is not Tobey Maguire.
It's Andrew Garfield, isn't it?
Nope.
It's Tom Holland?
It's Tom Holland.
Fuck.
It's when he gets the suit from... He puts on the suit that Happy gives him.
Okay.
Quick one here. Pizza time.
That's from Spider-Man 2. That's Tobey Maguire.
Yep.
Because he delivers pizzas for a while. He's not very good at it.
No thanks to me. Those weapons were out there and I tried to tell you about it, but you didn't listen. None of this would have happened if you just listened to me. If you even cared, you'd actually be here.
Is it Tom Holland?
That is Tom Holland.
Yeah, it sounds like it's from Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, he's...
Tony.
Talking to Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Or calling Tony Stark.
I feel like I'm getting most of these, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm probably like at a 75% clip.
Oh, there. It's way more than that.
Okay.
I'm not like you. You're a murderer, is the last quote.
Is that Tobey Maguire?
That is Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, I think he says it to Green Goblin. Old Gobby, as he puts it. Oh, New York, number one, oh,
wicked pop culture of my dying on the job. And I kinda like to be the one to tell you, girl, you mean not to be. Oh yeah.
A Cosmic Void was created by Alex Small and Jeremiah Perez. It's hosted by Alex Small. Produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 was written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vibrett. The song is performed by Tonight We Ride. A Cosmic Void is a Redwood Sound Labs production.
Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Hear Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living with Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.